bulletin. We're going to start with a quick quiz. One question quiz. It's pass fail. So if you don't get it right, you fail. Okay. If you get it right, you pass, obviously. What happened? Oh, and don't Google this. Okay. If we weren't live streaming, I would have Jim shut down the Wi-Fi right now or jam your phones. What happened April 10th, 1912? Yes, Ellen, she wins the prize. Yes, let's all give her prize. Okay, there it is. Yeah, April 10th, 1912, the Titanic. It set sail from England going to New York. Its maiden voyage, its only voyage. It was, at that time, the largest and hopefully the fastest ship in the world. The captain, wanting to prove its speed by breaking the record for crossing the Atlantic, he had the engines going full steam. And they were just 2 days away from New York, collided with an iceberg. We're familiar with that. Tremendous loss of life. What caused it? There's been so many documentaries on that, and what was the real cause, and documentaries about possible conspiracies behind it, and all of these things. It could all be summed up in a single phrase, I think. Lack of watchfulness. And that's what we're talking about tonight. A lack of watchfulness. Consider these facts that they've uncovered. The captain knew they were sailing into an area of ice packs. No precautions were taken, even though he knew that. Radio messages from other ships that had been in the area about the ice, those messages were ignored. The lookout up in the crow's nest didn't bother to report when he went on shift that night or for his shift. He didn't bother to report that the binoculars were missing, which could possibly have enabled him to see the iceberg before they hit it. No precautions at all to avoid icebergs were taken. Today, looking back at this, we would all say that that is irresponsible and foolish of that captain. He's to blame, perhaps. And yet, sometimes we believers approach our Christian life in the same way. We either are not concerned or we have the attitude, it couldn't happen to me when it comes to sin. Just like everyone thought the Titanic was unsinkable. It couldn't. I think I had read somewhere they didn't even have enough lifeboats for everybody because, it'll never sink. It'll never happen. Okay. Here's what Jesus said in Matthew 26:41. He said, watch and pray that ye enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. Jesus said, watch. Okay. So how do we exercise our watchfulness as we pursue holiness? Number one, we have to know our enemy. You've got to know your enemy. Turn to Ephesians 2. We'll be reading there in just a moment. What if the people in the early 1900s, what if they didn't know that icebergs can exist in cold water? They wouldn't be aware of the dangers. They would just go sailing through those waters, like the captain actually did, but he made a willful choice. So if they're going to pilot a ship through frigid waters, they need to know of the possible dangers that could exist in those waters. And we would appreciate the pilot of a ship knowing these things if we're a passenger on that ship. If we're a passenger on an airplane, we would appreciate the pilot knowing how high he can fly that plane or how low he can fly that plane, or how fast he can turn, or sharp he can turn that plane. We'd like him to know those dangers, because if he doesn't know them, then we're in danger ourselves. If we are going to exercise watchfulness, we need to start by knowing some things about our tempter. Now, the Bible talks about three different sources of temptations, and we find all three of them here in Ephesians chapter 2. Look with me at verse number 1. "And you hath he quickened, who were dead in trespasses and sins." I should point out here that this passage is referring to us before we were saved, okay? However, we fight these same three sources today after we're saved. Okay, let's continue reading. Verse 2, Paul wrote, "Wherein in time past ye walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience, among whom also we all had our conversation," or our lifestyle, "in times past, in the lusts of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature the children of wrath, even as others." So there's three things in there. Let's take them one at a time. The first one that's mentioned is the world, a source of temptation, a source for our enemy. It says there in Ephesians 2, it calls it the course of this world. So the underpinnings of this phrase are so rich. It refers to the constant pressure that it exists, or that it exerts on us. The course of this world, the constant pressure. Kind of like the atmosphere, the air around us right now, the air pressure, okay? It exerts a constant pressure on us. It's all around us, providing, hopefully, constant pressure. Now, here's the alarming part of this phrase. Just like the atmosphere, we don't even realize it, that it's exerting pressure on us, do we? How many of you woke up this morning like, oh, the air pressure, I can feel it? We didn't even realize it. We kind of grow accustomed to it, right? The course of this world, the pressure that's being exerted on us by the world, don't even realize it. That's just something to keep in mind, okay? The influence of the world is very, very subtle, such that we don't even realize it. Advertising focuses on three areas of temptation, okay? And I think these are correct, but if you think they're not, that's okay. We'll just agree to disagree. But advertising generally focuses on three areas of temptation. Pleasure being one of them, okay? You need this because it's going to make you happy. Possessions, obviously, they want you to buy stuff, right? And then the third area is us feeling special. Psychology focuses on the pursuit of self-fulfillment and happiness, not holiness. What's going to make you happy? And there are all the other forms of media that are around us constantly exerting pressure. Eventually, what happens? Eventually, our resistance is worn down. It's kind of like running at higher altitudes. The air pressure is different at higher altitudes. This is why runners, when they are going to compete at a higher altitude, they'll go out there several days earlier so that they can adjust to the different amount of pressure. Now, folks, this is how values and practices that were at one time sinful. Think back 20 years ago. Values from 20 years ago. Practices from 20 years ago or 40 years ago that were at that time sinful, now they're acceptable. How does that happen? Does God change? It's the constant pressure being exerted on us by the world, we don't even know the influence that it's having on us. The society, folks, that we live in today is filled with icebergs. Now, if you know anything about icebergs, what you see above the water is a small portion of it. There's a whole lot underneath, and that's where the damage takes place, the stuff you can't see. It's not foolish it is foolish and irresponsible to not be watchful. We must be watchful, okay? We can't be asleep at the wheel. So the second source of temptation after the world from Ephesians 2 is the devil. He is the mastermind behind the temptations. But 1 Peter 5:8, it says, be sober, be serious-minded, in other words, be vigilant, don't be asleep at the wheel, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about, seeking whom he may devour. Now, the world exerts its pressure randomly on everybody, doesn't it? This verse tells us the devil is actively, intentionally looking to tempt us directly in some area. These two sources are dangerous. The world's approach is subtle. The devil's approach is one that will blindside us when we least expect it. Like, whoa, where did that come from? But our greatest source of temptation, it is us. As we see there in Ephesians chapter 2, our flesh, our sinful nature, even though, as we've already studied, it does not have dominion or control over us since we've been saved, it's still there, okay? It's still there waging a type of guerrilla warfare on us. It does end run, sneak attacks on us. Guerrilla warfare, those in the military will say it's the most difficult kind to defeat because you can't see it coming. There's surprise attacks. James spoke of this very sinful nature. James chapter 1 and 14, he said, but every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust, desires, and enticed. So to take this another step tonight, we're trying to know our enemy, okay? So this means if we're going to know our enemy and our biggest enemy is us, we have to know yourself. How well do you know yourself? Here's how we could describe our sinful nature. If you would, picture it like a radar, okay? It's constantly scanning the environment. Our sinful nature. Yours is different from mine. We're all different. But our sinful nature is scanning the environment for the temptations unique to you that it can respond to. It's just constantly looking for them. Let me give you an example. You take an exit on the interstate. What happens when you take the exit on the interstate? What do you see? What's that? Say it again. Okay, signs. How many? Well, it depends on where your exit is. If you're exiting at Raymond, there's no signs. But you're pulling off in Rockford or something, and you take that exit. Boom! Signs everywhere. Dozens of businesses, restaurants, gas stations, specialty shops. Of course, there's the Walmart and Hobby Lobby and hotels. Signs are everywhere. How many of you, when you take the exit, read every single sign? I don't think anybody does, okay? But here's what happens to me, and this is why I'm giving this illustration, because this is real. It happens to me. I connect with this. When depending on what your interests are, those signs will pop out at you. If you take that exit and you've had a little too much to drink in the car, you need a bathroom, like right now, okay? You're looking for gas station or restaurant, okay? And that's all you see. You don't see any of the other signs. For me, when I step out or when I get off the interstate, what signs do I see? Coffee, right. That's after I've gone to the bathroom from the other coffee that I've drank, right? And then it's time to fill up again. It's coffee. I see them. No one else in the car would see them. I'll say, oh, there's a Starbucks. Where? Starbucks, Caribou, Big B, any other regional coffee shops, local coffee people. I see those signs. They just jump right out at me. That's what interests me. That's my desires, okay? I see it. I see the sign. I imagine what it would be like to have a fresh, hot cup of coffee. I'm thirsty. That's what I tell myself now. Okay? Or, I think I need to get out and stretch my legs anyway. This would be a good time to stop, try out this new coffee shop. I haven't tried that coffee before. All of these thoughts are now going through my head. Okay? And before you know it, I'm stopping. All of those thoughts, we got a word for those. Rationalizing, justifying, giving in to this desire. Now, it's not a sinful thing, okay, to do that. I promise you, it's in the Bible somewhere. I just haven't found it yet, okay? But coffee is harmless, but it illustrates how our sin nature works. Remember, yours is different from mine and everyone else's. James 1:14, it says, every man is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires. There's that radar looking for things that knows you are susceptible to. So when it comes to sin, our flesh is always looking for opportunities to satisfy its desires. So how do we know ourselves? Number one, you have to know your weaknesses, and yours are going to be different from mine. If we don't know our own weaknesses, how can we stand? How can we, as Paul said, don't make provision for the flesh to be tempted? Well, how can we do that if we don't know what our weaknesses are? Proverbs chapter 27 in verse 12, it says, a prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. A wise man foresees the temptation. A wise man knows that for me and what my desires are, this would not be good. This environment, these people, this kind of movie, this whatever is not going to be good. So because he knows his weakness, what does it say he does? He hides himself from it. He doesn't even go near it, okay? We'll come back to that here later. Just like the captain of the Titanic, if we can see the danger, we can avoid it. Or we can at least make the decision to avoid it. Each of us is exposed to a number of temptations every single day. Did you realize that? Probably more than, if we try to put a number on it, it's probably way more than that, because remember how the world works? Very subtle. It's just constant pressure. So we need to study ourselves, our environments that we move in, those areas where we are vulnerable, and then plan how we can best guard ourselves against them. That's what a wise man does from Proverbs, 27:12, I think it is. Okay, so we have to know our weaknesses. What do you think the next one is? Know your strengths. Yes. So this must be the counterattack to our weaknesses, to know our strengths. Not so. Let me explain what I mean by that. This is a bad thing too, by the way. Every so often, we hear of someone, usually a man, getting arrested for immorality. Someone that was perhaps in a leadership position. Or we hear of a man that left his wife, or a wife that left her husband. That happens too. And I looked at the numbers of that. More men leave their wives than wives leave their husbands, but the number isn't that different. I think it's 20% versus 15%, okay? Or maybe we hear of someone that has stolen from their employer. I think someone just recently in the state of Illinois got in trouble for that, stealing from the state. Or we're and when we hear these things, we're shocked, aren't we? We're shocked that someone would do those things. Just last year, there was a pastor in Champaign. In the last year, there was a pastor here in Taylorville arrested for immorality issues with minors. Would you ever do that? I ask that question on purpose because I think that's why we're shocked when we hear these things. We think, how could someone do these things? I could never do these things. Wait a minute. Before we answer that, let's see what God says about that question or that thought. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 12, God warns us, "Wherefore let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall." Now, I entitled this number here, "Know Your Strengths," because that can be a bad thing. If we think we're strong in a particular area, God said, "Whoa, hold on a second. Beware," okay? We never, ever get to the place where we no longer need to watch. We always have to watch. Even in areas where we think we are strong, perhaps those are areas where we need to throw up some red flags and say, "Whoa, I need to be careful. I really think I'm strong in this area." Remember, David was a man after God's own heart before he fell with Bathsheba and then murdered her husband. Okay? Beware when you think you stand. So, where is our safety? Where is our safe zone in here? Here it is. A deep sense of humility as we realize how powerful our sin nature is. It doesn't have control over us since we have the Holy Spirit. That dominion has been broken, but it's still powerful. And it's sometimes being fed every day by our own desires and those little things we ignore. And we just keep feeding it. What this means is that we never think there are areas where we don't need to be on our guard. Always on guard. Okay, let's look at number three in our outline. Let's talk about little things. Now, this is another area where we need to exercise our watchfulness. This is an area that is so easy to overlook because of the title. Little things. It's no big deal. Quit making such a big deal about it. Quit being so picky, right? God would call it being watchful. In fact, because these things are little, we tend to ignore them. If the light of Scripture is being shown on them, well, let's not get carried away and get too picky, is what sometimes our thoughts are. It's just, As I read through this list that I have here, I want you to very quickly, as I read through it, identify which one you could put your name on it, okay? It's just a little evil, a little sin, a little inconsistency, a little nudity in the movie that we're watching in our home, a little swearing, a little indiscretion, a little inappropriateness, a little indulgence of the flesh, just a little rebellion, a little laziness, a little cowardliness, a little meanness, which we call, oh, I just having a bad day, okay? A little rudeness to someone, a little temper, a little indifference toward the feelings of others, a little irritability, a little selfishness, a little vanity, a little pride, just a little gossip, a little tale-bearing, a little dishonesty when the cashier gave us the wrong change. How many of those had your name on it? Just this week. You see, a little bit here, a little bit, 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 and we're not so clean anymore, are we? But we haven't done any vile acts of pedophilia. We haven't killed anyone. But we're not so clean. We're not so holy. And we haven't even done the bad things. The little things matter, folks. Life doesn't really have too many grand earth-shattering moments in it. Most of our lives are pretty boring, okay? They're the same-y-same-o, right? That's I learned that from you, Pat. Same old thing, over and over again, every day. It's just the same old thing. Most of our lives are like that. It's mostly made up of many, many little events. The little things. Little things that play a greater role in defining us than the big things do. I don't know the author of this quote, but he said, "He that despises little things shall fall little by little." That is so true. How else can you explain a pastor doing vile things? Little by little. How else can you explain a husband and wife that stood next to each other at the altar, madly in love with each other, years down the road, they're both having affairs? Little by little, okay? Number four, we're going to call this Christian liberty. Now, perhaps you've heard this illustration before. I've heard it several different ways, so I'm not sure of its accuracy. One was in a biography of women that tamed the West, that kind of a book. And this woman apparently stated this when she tried to get a job as a Pony Express rider or something like that. But here's another way that I've read this illustration before. A wealthy woman was hiring a chauffeur. And as she interviewed them, she asked the candidates how close they could get to the edge of the road. She even took them out for a ride in her limousine, had them drive to show her how close they could get to the edge of the road. Every candidate tried to outdo the other and get closer and closer and closer to the edge. One candidate stayed as far away as he could from the edge of the road, from the edge of the cliff. He stayed as far away as he could. He got the job. Here's the point. In the area of Christian liberty, our goal should be how safe can I be, not how close to the line I can get without crossing it. As a youth pastor, I got that question occasionally from teenagers in dating relationships, okay? Where's the line? I don't want to cross the line. They're wanting to get as close as they can to the line, right? Let me ask this question. What is Christian liberty? I just kind of threw that term out there. It's a term that's used to cover the multitude of activities in our lives that the Bible doesn't really say anything specifically about. Okay, the Bible doesn't say anything about video games or television or social media or clothing styles, okay? There's all kinds of things in our life the Bible doesn't say anything specific. So we have the liberty to choose for ourselves. hopefully guided by biblical principles for holiness. Here's a good verse to remember when it comes to all of these other areas. Galatians 5:13, it says, "For, brethren, you have been called unto liberty, only use not liberty for an occasion to the flesh, but by love serve one another." And Paul is warning the Galatians here, you have this liberty. You can make your own choices. Remember, the Jews, the Israelites, these early believers were coming off of a system of Pharisees with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of rules that they had to follow if they're going to be holy. And the Bible just wiped away a lot of those. Now they have liberty. They can make their own choices. But Paul warns them, don't use this freedom to feed your flesh. Don't use it. Only use not liberty for an occasion to the flesh. Now that word occasion, okay, this is another deep part in the context. It's a military term, and it has the idea of a base camp of operation. And from that base camp, attacks would be launched. So if we could we have that verse back up there, please? Thank you. There it is. Don't use your liberty for a base camp for the flesh where attacks can be launched. In other words, don't use your freedom in such a way that would allow our sin nature the opportunity, a base of operation, a springboard to attack us. So what do? Stay as far away from the front lines as possible, knowing that our flesh has this tendency, we should be watchful against it. Years ago, the Christian community sought to do this for people, to be watchful for them, okay? It's going back 20, 30 years, 40 years, however long. And the Christian community was going to be watchful for individual Christians, and they came up with a list of don'ts, okay? You probably know some of those list of don'ts that would protect them from the front line. Now, it resulted in a bunch of modern Pharisees. The list of don'ts kept getting longer and longer and longer. The specific rules of behavior were then kind of subconsciously added to the Bible. Now, recently, there's been a reaction against that legalism, okay? Especially with younger people, more so than those that are our age, but even among our generation, there has been a reaction against those rules that aren't in the Bible. But we need to be careful that the pendulum, which was way over here with the list of don'ts, we have to be careful that it doesn't swing too far the other way and we start giving occasion for the flesh to be tempted. Because it has swung too far for many people. Do we want to see how close we can come to the edge? Or do as God says and make no provision for the flesh to be tempted. Paul gave us these guidelines here. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, he said, "All things are lawful for me, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any." Now, before I look at the next verse, let me explain what Paul is saying there. There's all of these things. The Bible really doesn't say a lot about them. There's not thou shalt not associated with them. They're lawful for me, but I am there. It's maybe not the best choice. They're lawful for me, but I am not going to allow these things to bring me under their power. And I was having a conversation this past week with someone in a Bible study. We were looking at this verse, and the illustration that came to my mind was, every teenager can relate to this, video games, right? There's nothing wrong with video games. But when it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you're still playing and you got to get up and go to school tomorrow, there's a problem. What's the problem? You've allowed that to bring you under its power. violating this verse here. Next one, 1 Corinthians 10:23. Oh, and by the way, 1 Corinthians 6:12, we could throw TV in there for us adults, mature people, okay? Social media, okay? Nothing wrong with eating, but after 7 or 8 plates, we need to call it quits, right? Or we're being brought under its power. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 23, it says, all things are lawful for me, but all things are not expedient. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? He said, all things are lawful for me, but all things edify not. Now, the word edify is build up. So verse 24, it says, let no man seek his own, but every man another's wealth. Now, here's the gist of the last part of that verse. Even though these things might be fine, and there's no thou shalt nots against them, and they're not bringing me under their subjection, if me doing these things is not going to build up other people, and it's going to be a stumbling block to other people, Paul says, I'm not going there. So here's kind of 3 questions that we can ask from those verses that we just looked at. As we're looking at these areas of Christian liberty where we can make our own choice, first question, ask yourself, is it beneficial? First of all, does it promote my spiritual life? Is it going to build me up spiritually? If the answer is no, that doesn't mean it's a bad thing, okay? We'll just go through these questions, and if you get all no's, it's time to move on to something else, perhaps. But second question, is it a practice that will master me? Is it a practice that will master me? Okay. Now, you all know I used to talk about those Krispy Kreme donuts. I don't do that so much anymore. Ever since I went on my sugar fast and got all that junk out of my system, I eat donuts now. I know, it feels like confession time, doesn't it? No, I should say this way. I eat donut now. If I go to a Krispy Kreme, I'm not buying a half a dozen donuts because I'll eat them all. I'll buy one donut. Hopefully the light's on and I get my free one and then just leave. Why is that? Because of the second question. Is it a practice that will master me? I'm not making provision for my flesh to be tempted, so I'm not going to have the 6 donuts sitting on the seat next to me because I'll eat them all. There's nothing wrong with donuts, but it can control me. Some of y'all may not have a problem with Krispy Kremes. Some of y'all, it's Mountain Dew or energy drinks or I almost said coffee, but no, that's not a bad thing. Here's our third question, okay? Will it promote the spiritual well-being of other believers? Folks, that's why we're here, to build the kingdom of God. Not to make me, myself, and I happy. We like to make ourselves happy, but that's not why we're here. And if anything, these questions could show us where we need to be watchful, where we need to have some boundaries. But it also can help us redirect our focus on others instead of, well, it's my liberty. I can do what I want. That's going to get us into trouble, folks. We're going to have to stop there for tonight, and we'll continue on next week. We have some time. Let's break up into some prayer groups.